Welcome, everybody, to the Spawn of Me podcast. I'm your host, Khalif Adams. This is episode 208 of our show. I'm joined this week and every week by my man, my mellow, the smooth kind of fellow, the second patented scientist in terms of making vibranium. We have Cicero Holmes. How are you doing, sir?
Thank you very much. I am not allowed to discuss or disclose the formula for smelting vibranium. I will not allow that to get out Wakanda forever.
Oh, that was really sweet. That was a nice little touch right at the end. That was nice. Aww. You didn't even do the hand gesture, but I was expecting it. Also joining us this week and every week is my man, my mellow, the man who makes science look good, who makes STEM look good, who makes everything look good, mini froze especially. It is that man, the myth, the legend. It is Sharif Jackson of SharifJackson.com. How are you doing, sir?
I never freeze. What's up, y'all? My favorite thing is everybody's hype for Black Panther, but I still think that Chadwick has one of the most hilariously bad accents for Black Panther. I love it, but I've been kind of just saying it over and over again, and it's like just like the Black Panther is passed on by, you know, it's bad. I love it though.
Well, but so I'm yeah. Hyped. So apparently the story behind that is like it is an amalgamation of several sub-Saharan African English accents, but not derivative of a colonialized
of European. I get it.
Yeah.
It's just still funny to me.
Though. It is. I'll give you that.
I mean. I was just tweeting about this the other night, and I was like, the worst thing I've seen, especially because the Olympics is coming up and everyone's been talking about the bobsled team from Jamaica.
Right.
There have been so many awful, terrible, just rancid Jamaican accents in all of rhythm. Hollywood. Fieldy rhythm, fieldy rhyme.
Fieldy ride.
They're all terrible. I was like, yo, if there was a Mount Rushmore of terrible Jamaican accents, it would have Denzel Washington on it.
From what?
It would have, huh?
From what? From what did it?
Was he? Wait, Mighty Quinn? I think he was in Mighty Quinn.
Yes, he
I
was.
Remember
in Mighty
him
Quinn.
Doing a Jamaican accent?
So you have Denzel Washington would be on there.
Okay.
You would have Robert Townsend would be on there. You would have every actor who was black in Marked for Death with Steven Seagal.
Yes, okay, yes.
I definitely agree with that.
Yes.
And there needs to be one other person. I just can't think of who that other person would be, though.
Dave Chappelle? I can't. If I'm not Jamaican, why am I wearing this hat?
Yeah. I don't know. I think similar to Marked for Death, the actors in Predator 2.
Yes.
With your boy Danny Glover.
Yeah.
Taking out the Predator in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
As well.
It's a lot of terrible, awful accents out there. But
whoever played the crab in Little Mermaid.
Under the sea.
Well, think about this though. Somebody brought that up and they was like, at least they had a Jamaican in Atlantis.
Right.
And I was like, that's kind of true.
Right.
I can't front. I'm not mad at that. That's actually kind of decent that's a thing. But it was definitely awful, awful, awful. But thank you, everyone, for coming and hanging out with us tonight. Thank you for coming and hanging out with us last week as well. We had a whole bunch of fun. Definitely check out that show. People have been sharing that one out because we were talking all that stuff about Dr. Disrespect and the rest of them cats. Some people have been sharing that out. I got some really good fan mail in our inbox this week because of it. And people were not excited and they were not happy. So it's going to be a fun show tonight. We have a couple of quick things. We're going to be doing a fairly quick show tonight. Some of the news of the day is pretty light, but we had a couple of quick things to kind of talk about. I know something that you kind of brought up, C, since it is Black Panther night here in Bracago / Wakanda, Wakanda North.
Right.
you wanted to talk about kind of what Black Panther is in terms of gaming stuff too, right?
Yeah. I mean, the thing about it is that this movie you know, is on everyone's radar, whether it's on your radar to stay away or whether it's on your radar to go and see it. It's on everyone's radar, and the, you know, the anticipation for it and the conversations behind it are palpable. And it made me think back to the time when the default was, and Reef and I, you know, we've kind of talked about this in separate shows, but like the inevitable tie-in video game to a movie like this, a superhero movie, where you have all of those tie-in games. And I wanted to know what everyone's favorite movie tie-in video game has been. So, Kyle, I'll ask you, what was your favorite? You know what, Reef? I'm gonna ask you.
Ooh,
because
last minute.
Because
Audible.
Because Kai.
No.
Yeah, Kai had the eyebrow raise of I need more time.
Yeah,
he also wasn't ready.
Yeah. Also, Kai like doesn't really watch movies. And that, he hates a lot of movies.
That's
so
not true.
Also that.
He hates Star Wars movies.
So he kind of has to sift through and say, well, what do I like? Okay, that what game is based on that. So I understand.
What good movie made a thing that
okay.
I watched?
Here's,
because
here's,
they're good movies and they're whack movies.
Here is mine, okay? And it's an older game, but I think it still stands the test of time. So in 1989, Tim Burton revived superhero movies by launching Batman.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
Michael Douglas.
Yes.
Jack Nicholson. Very, very dope take.
Prince.
I still think, exactly. Tons of Prince music. Prince did the whole soundtrack. I mean, like the Joker storming a museum with a boombox playing Prince.
Yes.
It's still one of the greatest scenes I remember. I still think arguably the best Joker. I know a lot of people think Heath Ledger is the best, but I think arguably Jack, still has it on there. Sunsoft, a company that no longer exists, made a Nintendo movie tie-in to Batman where they actually, followed. It's a movie tie-in. They follow the plot of the movie. Now, obviously they added a bunch of platforming and that kind of stuff, but the cinematics in the game, and this was way before cinematics were really a big thing in like video games, really only Ninja Gaiden was really the only game that I think was really memorable for its cinematics.
Right.
Batman NES had some pretty impressive cinematics that had all the stuff that like you remember, like Do You Want to Dance with the Devil in the Pale Moonlight and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Really, really good platforming game, dope music. And I was obsessed with 1989 Batman at the same time I was obsessed with this game, and like this is a time where like Batman was, it was everywhere. It was like Happy Meals and toys and all that stuff. This is before we got too played out with like Batman and Robin and all that stuff. So like it was still fresh. This was probably one of the first like really gritty takes on a comic book in terms of a mainstream like a movie.
Right.
And I think that the game really, really justified that as well. That showed that same grittiness can like carry over to like a video game adaptation. So to me, Batman is a great example of this.
Word up! Shout out to Batman's purple suit in that in that game. So that was a great game. Hard game. Also,
very hard. Super
very
hard.
Very hard game. If you guys have an NES lying around, not an NES Classic because it doesn't have that game on there.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Hit up your favorite emulator retailer and pick up Batman by Sunsoft, 1989. Ka.
Yeah.
Now that you've had some time to lower your eyebrows. What's your favorite superhero video game movie tie-in?
After being called a professional hater by someone in the chat who will not be named, I have come to realize and remember the only one that I can think of off the top of my head was The Warriors, which was a good one.
Yeah, it was a good one.
I think that one was one that I was like, because I think I played it right after seeing the movie for the first time.
Oh, wow.
And really hadn't seen the movie, but I'd heard the lore about how, you know, it was this homage to New York and right. it was like old Brooklyn and old Coney Island right. and all the stuff that made New York good when you got robbed and you were happy about it. You got mugged. And like, I live in New York and got mugged. Like right. I'm living the New York experience for real.
Yay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You went home. You were happy. It was that game. It was a lot of fun because it had so many connections to the movie, and it felt like Rockstar took their time with that game in a way that they didn't really do with some of. Well, that's not true because some of the Grand Theft games had already been out, but they hadn't really gotten to that magnitude yet, right. where they had gotten that big. So having a game like this where they kind of got the license, was able to do some of the really cool stuff as showing the whole map and kind of being able to play as some of the warriors in that game was a lot of fun. I feel like if I go back to it now, though, I wonder how it holds up. I don't know if it will. That's the thing that I've always worried about, especially if it was a PS2 game.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to figure out if that game is going to be something that people look back on with fondness too, because it's hard. Like, those games are rough.
So
like, I like Manhunt. Manhunt was a good game, but it wasn't.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, so the Warriors had the Manhunt engine,
right?
In it, but it was more combat heavy. Kind of, it was almost kind of like the precursor to what you saw in Batman. You know, in the Batman Arkham games. In terms of the combat, where, you know, mm-hmm. it was very visceral hand-to-hand combat. And I think that the game, because it's polygons, won't hold up graphically, but I think the mechanics of that game probably will.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to guess.
Weirdly,
I think you're right. I mean, yeah. like the polygon games, unfortunately, a lot of those PS1, really N64 era games, they just don't hold up well, which is why, you know, that I think those are most apt for like remasters and stuff.
True. I would like, yeah, that would be dope if they made that a remaster. That would be cool.
Yeah.
I think they did Bully, but they didn't do anything else really.
Right.
So that would be cool if they did that one. Yeah. That would be funky. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What was your C?
Well, first off, I'll let you get off the hook, even though maybe the Warriors are like superheroes because they made it all the way from the Bronx to Coney Island.
I mean, they're definitely superheroes in that movie.
Did, right. you, see, yeah. did you see them run their asses from all the way? Right.
Yeah. I mean, they did that. They did the damn thing.
They're superhuman bus passes.
Right, right.
That's real.
Right, exactly. they had hypersonic turnstile jumping abilities.
I know, right?
Oh, shit.
So my favorite superhero movie video game tie-in is Spawn. No.
That game was good, man.
That game was terrible.
I defend Spawn.
Yeah, that is, you defend awful things. You try to defend black people because it was black people in there, but nah, that game was terrible. So I've got two, actually. So the first is a pretty easy one. Spider-Man 2, based on the Sam Raimi second Spider-Man movie, with Dr. Octopus and yeah. That game was amazing because you had this open world New York, you had the voices directly from the movie, so all of that stuff tied in. It was a really, really great game. You know, some of the, like, you know, they cheated a little bit with the open worldness because you had to like go and rescue a balloon, and you know, you had to do that 75 times, and there was a lot of repetition in it, and then, you know, you swung around New York City, around Manhattan, trying to collect comic book covers and stuff like that. Like, that was really cool. But the game itself, I thought, was really dope. It was innovative for the time. But the other one, this one gets overlooked a lot, and mm-hmm. that is X-Men Origins Wolverine. Or the, oh, wow. is it, was it,
I didn't know there was a game based on it.
Was that a movie game?
Yeah, yeah.
I remember the movie. But.
So the Wolverine X-Men game that came out right after X-Men Origins Wolverine was like a 1.5 version of, so it like took pieces from the movie and expanded the story a little bit. And the game itself was much better than the movie it was made to represent. And it didn't get a lot of acclaim, and people didn't wind up not playing it because the movie was so bad. And then the assumption was that if the movie was this bad, that the game is going to be worse, because generally that's how it works. But that game was really good.
That's interesting. Yeah, I forgot all about that game. That was one of the first ones where they were like, Wolverine can finally be Wolverine, right, and like cut people's heads off and all this other cool shit. Wasn't that game?
Yeah, yeah. It's adamantium bullets. And then you had Ryan Reynolds playing Deadpool for the first time.
Right.
And he didn't get to speak, and he became Weapon X 11.
Yeah, he was Weapon X Deadpool.
Right, right.
And he teleported and shot Cyclops laser and all that stuff.
Yeah, it was wild. That movie was horrible. But the game was much, much better, and it was pretty violent, as someone in the chat already said. I think the movie was a PG, but the game was rated M. It was damn good. It was
for Marvel,
right? It was much better than you would expect.
Rated M for Marvel.
Did you say your second one?
Oh, that was the second one. The first one was Spider-Man 2. The second one was Wolverine.
Interestingly enough, none of us said the Friday the 13th game.
True.
Well, I mean, we're thinking, is that a superhero game, though?
That's like a series tie-in. But, I mean, yes. Like, I wouldn't begrudge anybody if they said that.
Yeah.
That game is a love letter to the 80s and a love letter to that series. Absolutely.
Definitely. Because if we're going outside the superhero genre, I would also suggest Enter the Matrix, which I really enjoyed.
Oh, man, that game was broken.
I loved it, though.
That game was broken.
It was really dope.
Because, like, it was kind of a side story that had, like, different characters that, like, interwoved with the main story. And like, the, like, actors from the movie actually filmed scenes.
It had digital Jada Pinkett.
It was actually pretty dope. I never played that Matrix Online thing.
I never really checked for that. Yeah, I didn't play that.
But
I think that was the first game that had digital Bantu knots in it,
right?
Because it had Jada's hair in it. That's actually kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, if you go outside the genre, really honestly, peep the echo on this, y'all. Nothing can top the Genesis versions of The Lion King and Aladdin.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Those are really good games.
I hated those games.
Yeah, I loved those good, like 16-bit like Disney games. They were really good. I mean, Little Mermaid was also pretty good. But No. Disney's game development studio back then, they knew how to make some platformers.
But the Genesis versions were markedly better than the SNES version.
I think it was different developers because Disney would license it to different people for a platform.
Right.
So yeah. All right. So yeah. Thanks for that topic. See, pretty dope. Yeah. So I wanted to introduce our next topic, where we talk about different game series that might have an ending to them, or might not. And whether we should devote our time into it. I was inspired by this because I was thinking about a game like, say, Mass Effect Andromeda, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Where it didn't do too well. The game intentionally has some unsolved plot lines that, you know, were intended to be fleshed out on some DLC and in future games. But unfortunately, EA said, yo, no DLC. And we got to take some time to think about what the hell we're doing with this franchise, you know? So I was like, you know, would I still recommend a game, even though I know that there might be some unfleshed out, unsolved things? I got this from a story on Waypoint that like talks more about like, TV seasons that like get like canceled, and like should you still invest in like a series that like ended early,
right?
Which like I say yes if it's awesome,
right?
And I think the same thing about games as well. Like I would still recommend a game that I really liked even if it didn't get, say, a sequel, you know. I don't think a game necessarily has to quote unquote finish its narrative to be good, you know. It can leave you wanting for more, but I think sometimes that's a good feeling to have after a game. So like I think even though a game series might not get that like sequel or that next version, or the dev might get bought out or go out of business or like whatever, mm-hmm. you know, I still think that those are games that you know, if they're good, that should still be like recommended and like worthy of check it out. So, what do you think? Do you think that if a series is sort of like already ended prematurely, would you still kind of recommend people to check that series out, even though they might not get all the answers that they're looking for?
Short answer is absolutely. The long answer, or the quotable stubby standness of it, God. Would be
Lord.
Better to have a series end prematurely than to have it last too long. So, sure. You know, and I mean, that's really what it boils down to. I think about games like that won't get a sequel that I thought were great. A game that you can play if you have an Xbox right now, Quantum Break. I think that's a fantastic game that probably won't ever get a sequel. You know, what they attempted to do and what they were able to accomplish with that game, I thought was really, really innovative. The game mechanics were good. They, you know, they kind of run on at towards the end, but they're good mechanics. And then the interstitials of the live action episodes, they were damn good. Like they were much, much better than you would expect them to be. And I think the story worked out pretty well too. I'm trying to think of some other series where I felt like, oh man, this series was great, you know, it's too bad that they got a sequel. It's tough to think about because I think that a lot of games wind up getting sequels. You know, we're in this society, or we're in this industry where people aren't satisfied with striking gold once in a thing. They would rather run it into the ground and have people despise it as opposed to revere it. I mean, I think that case in point is Mass Effect, where I mean, even though you thought enough time went by between Mass Effect 3 and Andromeda, it clearly not enough time had gone by, and not enough time was taken into trying to figure out exactly what they were going to make in the next iteration of that series. I think about TV shows too. When you said that, there are these two shows that I've really loved. You know, obviously the easy one is Firefly, for everyone, but two shows that I loved was a show on NBC called Kings that had Ian McShane in it, and it was based on King Solomon from the Bible. But it was set in like modern day America, where there were two warring factions. Really, really great series. And then the other one was called Space Above and Beyond. And both of those series only went one season, but they were phenomenal. And, you know, I can't recommend them enough. So, so there you go.
Yeah. So, before you answer, Cod, there was like a good part in the chat by King Jesse, which I want to like acknowledge, that like basically said, did Destiny and Watch Dogs deserve sequels? I think that's a good thing to start off, because on the MMO side, it's like, you know, if there's a game that you know is going to end support, but you enjoy it, would you still say, hey, you should check this game out, right? Like all those MMOs that, you know, like Auto Assault and all these games that like kind of flared out, if I really enjoyed it, I probably would hesitate there to recommend it if I knew that it was losing support in a finite time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, both Destiny and Watch Dogs had, you know, some rough beginnings. And, I mean, Watch Dogs was, you know, I thought awful. And Destiny just took way too long to invest in to really see the positive parts of it. So, it's an interesting point, I think. So, Kai, what do you think about investing in things that have kind of a clear end and might leave you unsatisfied?
I kind of like that, actually. I kind of prefer when games give you an ending that is satisfying or maybe not satisfying, but you kind of understood what they were trying to do artistically. I think that that's kind of cool. Like, it was interesting to hear the announcement of Last of Us 2, because that was a game I did not want to have a sequel.
Right.
Yes. I agree with that.
I wanted that game to not have a sequel so bad. I was like, please don't do, like, this is a perfect beginning, end, and middle to, I mean, beginning, middle, end to the way that this kind of narrative is being brought to the community and to gamers. And I was like, don't do it. You don't need to do it. It's perfect. Leave it alone. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to make a 2, which I'm now super excited for, but don't know if they can top themselves in the beginning. Like, it's great to see it in terms of where they're going to take things technically, but in terms of narrative, I was like, man, you don't need to do that. Interestingly enough, a game that should have stopped before it kept going was it's weird because I want this game to come back and have a sequel, and I wish that I could, like, wipe away the third game. And that's Dead Space. Like, yeah. I love Dead Space. Oh, man.
Yeah. Dead Space 1 and 2 were great.
Dead Space was so good. And I love that series. And that third game just ruined it because they just went to this place that it didn't need to go to. And you can see that they were trying to stretch that story out in a way that was unreasonable. And then when they did it, they had nowhere else to go. So they just kind of threw everything at you in one shot, and it wound up being terrible. So it's interesting to see where you see games kind of hit their peak, and then you're like, all right, if you leave it here, you're probably in a good spot. But because of money, because of, you know, internet want, you see a whole bunch of games kind of hit this extra level that they wind up kind of falling off the cliff. Jumping really quick, because you jumped onto movies real fast, see. The one series that I would love to have seen keep going was the one on HBO in the early 90s, and it was called Carnival.
Mm. Carnival was fantastic.
I don't remember that.
It was one of the best series. Yeah. Like, I'm usually not a person who gets attached to series. I don't really watch TV like that because things don't really keep my attention in that same way. Mm-hmm. I would run home to watch that joint every night, every week,
right?
And it was fantastic. And they shut it after one season.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of parts to that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, in that vein, True Detective mm-hmm. was,
isn't
everybody's
that still
favorite.
Going though?
No. It just went 2 seasons, but because
they announced the third one with Mahershala Ali. I thought.
Oh, really?
Well, I know I mispronounced his name, but
right.
That guy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Like the Madden guy.
Yeah.
That's his name now. Yeah. The Madden guy.
I didn't realize that they were doing a third season, but yeah.
I think they are.
Right. So, the first season was a phenomenon. I mean, it was all that everybody talked about. And then they announced the second season and announced that, you know, this was going to be kind of an anthology type of series. And the second season, you know, was everyone was all excited to watch this thing that would, you know, that they were so excited about the season before. And it, you know, I mean, basically turned into Destiny 2. You know, I mean,
damn,
you know, like,
damn,
you know, no, you know, you know, not trying to throw shade inappropriately, but you know, I mean, let's keep it $150. So, it is what it is.
Keep it 225.
Right.
225. Is there a game that you can see now that's kind of in the in, like our present time that you are like they're gonna make this game into another version of something, or they're gonna add on to the series and it's gonna be bad.
Well, you know, so I mean, that's
like, does Destiny 3 happen?
Well, oh, Destiny 3 will definitely happen. Definitely, it sold a lot. Destiny 2 sold a lot.
Right. Yeah. Destiny 3 will definitely happen. I actually think that they, you know, they may wind up doing okay with Destiny 3. They'll have to kind of reinvent the wheel and figure out where everyone is in the space. Like, Destiny 3 may be a battle royale. Like, who knows what the fuck is going to be, but you know, it might be something completely different. It's tough to kind of gauge, because if there is something that you like, you want to see something, you know, you want to see, maybe you possibly want to see something more from that, or maybe you just want to see more from the studio, but
right,
you don't wish them ill. Like, I don't wish anybody goes out and makes, you know, and lays an egg. So, you know, I think about games like Inside, you right. know, where I would never want to see an Inside 2. Like, right. you know, like, I don't want to see, we'll go deeper inside. Because that game, but because
I never freeze,
right? the thing is that game was perfect the way it was because of the conversations around the ending. You know, like, you got 5 hours in that game. You can go back and replay it, but it was a self-contained story that allowed you and people are in your circle to really kind of discuss the message that game was bringing. But it was successful, and it was a game that people loved. But we can leave it there.
Well, here's a good question for the room: what is the series that you want to die? What's the one that you want to see go away?
You know what? This might seem a little controversial, since I really liked the last game, but kind of done with Assassin's Creed, man.
Yes, I was gonna say the same thing.
I mean, I love Origins, but I think that was a nice cap on how many games are there? Mainline, like 9 or 10.
There's like 9 or 10
Assassin's Creed games. Like, I feel like, what more? Like, they already went all the way back. I know that they could do something maybe 2-3 years in the future, or 4 years in the future, but they could go out on a high note and they could just say, this is it. Let's revisit this in years down the line if there's something there. I think Assassin's Creed, I would be very comfortable if this was like the last one for many years.
The one for me in a very similar vein is Call of Duty.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't played a Call of Duty in years. I know that there are still people that are playing them. You know, and we know that what Activision does is they will beat that horse until it is dead, and then they'll beat it some more just to make sure it doesn't become a zombie. And they will squeeze every last ounce of you know, blood from that stone. But you know, what more can they do with that series? Honestly, what more can they do? They started in World War II. They went to the future. They went to World War. No, they didn't go to World War I. Battlefield went to World War I.
Yeah, World War II.
Yeah, they went. They came back to World War II. They came back to World War II. There's nothing more that they could do. Vietnam.
You know, I kind of disagree. I think they can do a lot with Call of Duty. I think they still have not tried to, they've tried, but like badly, really explore what it means to be a soldier, not just like a superhero killing everybody. Like, I think that they could try to go maybe along the lines of, say, like Spec Ops The Line or a game like that, where you're really diving into the psychology. I really like that about the Black Ops kind of series. I feel like they did a bit there.
That was really good.
I think that I wouldn't care if like Call of Duty left at this point, but if it stays, I think there's more to mine in terms of being like a soldier in like an imperialist country army. Like I think if they wanted to, they could do it, but you know, Activision's like, let's just churn this joint out. We got three developers working on it. Let's just churn this joint out.
Right. And that's I mean, you know, that's why I know it's not going anywhere. Because they've got three developers still working on it. But yeah, man, let's come on.
Done with it.
Is there anybody in the chat that's still playing Call of Duty?
I was playing Call of Duty the other day, actually.
Were you?
I was playing. It's not good. It's not a good experience. It's not a fun experience. I play Call of Duty to see how old I am. Like Call of Duty is an age check for me. It's like when you go to age verification page, like Call of Duty is that for me at this point, where I'm just like, all right, how bad are my hand and eye coordination? How bad has it gotten? How sucky am I in comparison to all the other people who are younger than I am? So it's that at this point where I'm literally trying to do the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar move, where it's like, I'm going to be smarter and not work harder.
Right.
And see if I can use whatever skills I've gotten to turn the tide for myself so I can feel like I'm not that old when I play. So Call of Duty is not a fun experience anymore. I play it literally just to be like, well, all right, am I still good at first-person shooters? Am I competent at this genre? And that's what it is.
Yeah, I still haven't played the World War II one, even though I own it.
The story was good. The story was good, but it has all the same problems that all the multiplayer Call of Duties have. Bad spawning, small maps. Like I play more zombies on Call of Duty than I do the actual like multiplayer at this point.
Yeah, and that's fine, because that's why they have it there, because they know that there's a lot of people that prefer that to the standard experience.
Yeah, yeah. A series that I would like to see go away is any Star Wars game. They need to stop making Star Wars games. That Star Wars game was bad. I'm just saying it. I'm going to say else wants to say it.
I want Amy Hennig, and I want my Star Wars Mass Effect type game. That's what I want.
Nope.
I don't want a first-person shooter. I want my Star Wars Mass Effect game.
Nah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I do want that, too. I do want something narrative-driven. That allows me to kind of, you know, some kind of hybrid between KOTOR, Knights of the Old Republic, and what we got now in Battlefront.
Star Wars is terrible. Stop standing for Star Wars. It's bad.
Yeah, nah. So it's
the Star Wars is the Cardi B. Star Wars is the Cardi B of genres and movies
of fandom. Blah.
A fandom is terrible.
Yo, yeah, stuff. Exactly. It's popping right now.
Yeah,
it's got right bloody back. Shoes.
I'm saying it's a Super Bowl commercial. Right. Like Cardi, man. Come on.
Right. It don't talk to you. That means they don't fuck with you.
Oh my God. Okay, we're not rapping Cardi B lyrics. That's a clear sign we need to go to the next topic.
Terrible.
So, our friend Patrick Klepek wrote this great article on Waypoint. Titled "My Job Doesn't Exist Without the Support of Fans: How Much Do I Owe Them?" And the line under that is, "As a public figure, my personal life has become part of my career. The line between disclosure, transparency, and gossip isn't clear anymore." So he basically talks about, you know, how, you know, being a public figure. Obviously, he's not like a, you know, a whatever, Ed Sheeran or whatever, like a super mainstream guy, right? Ed Sheeran represent. Oh, God. Actually, you know, I found out who Ed Sheeran was when he was on Game of Thrones. I had never heard of him before because I'm not cool. I don't listen to the radio. And they just had him on as some random guy singing. And I was like, who is this pretty guy singing in the middle of Game of Thrones? And like my partner was like, "That's Ed Sheeran." I was like, who's that? So
I feel like if you like Ed Sheeran music, you have to have a bearskin rug.
Oh my God.
I feel like those things go together. I feel like you need to have one for like the sonic waves like penetrate through your actual body and you enjoy things.
I think I do have, like, I think I've got one or maybe two of his albums.
I thought you were going to say that you had a bearskin rug. I was like, word.
And
I think he has both.
Or may not have a bearskin rug. I will not confirm nor deny.
Do you have the plastic runners that go to your bearskin rug?
Nah, chill. I'm not a grandmother.
I'm a grandfather, yo.
Show you right. Yeah, so I really like this article because it talks about, you know, how, you know, you... What are your expectations to fans in terms of what you disclose, especially in like situations like ours, where like, you know, people are financially like supporting us via like Patreon, you know, like do we have to keep everything public? Do we have a responsibility to like communicate anything that like happens to us? You know, I know it's like something that, you know, that I've seen a lot of people talk about. I've seen Tanya talk about it a lot as well, as like I Need Diverse Games has become more and more known, like you know we're not big time people, but we are known in our sphere. So it's like, how do we stay humble, and like how do we like protect enough of our private lives so that not everything is online. So I'll start with Ka first. What are some of the things that like you do to balance the line between sort of personal and professional podcaster?
Interestingly enough, you Sharif Jackson gave me the best advice about any of this stuff, and this was like way back when we were doing character select and we were talking about personal stuff offline, and you were like, I don't want to put anything online that my mama wouldn't want to see.
Yeah.
And I was like, that stuck with me forever once you said that thing. And I was like, oh, okay, my mama was a cuss bucket, so when I say fuck online, she won't be too mad.
Yeah.
she won't be too mad when I put
I still go off that.
And it's great. It's you're doing better than I am, because I will go on these random ass rants at 2 o'clock in the morning saying stuff I'm not supposed to say. But I feel like, in terms of, you know, how I try to keep my online and personal stuff connected, you know, make those lines and those separators, I don't. It's interesting where it's been less about, for me personally, how much personal stuff I share. It's been more dependent upon where I'm at right now in my particular professional life, where I have a 9-to-5 job. I do real work and do other stuff when I'm not podcasting and playing video games. And I'm also like in between spaces where I'm like trying to like look for work and also still trying to find other things that I'm trying to do and figure out how to manage my online persona, which I kind of hate even saying that out loud because it feels gross, with, you know, who I am as a person. And I think most people who have met me, you know, whether it's been at a conference or at a meetup or something like that, they know that the person that they see or hear on Twitch or on our podcast is pretty much me anyway. You know, I don't really change who I am for other people because it seems unrealistic and unreasonable to do that. But it's been more interesting to see how I have held my tongue on certain things or have tried to massage things in different ways because I need to be able to figure out how I'm going to maneuver when I'm looking for work or when I'm looking for trying to help out other people or trying to keep other people safe. Because people, I don't think a lot of people know that, you know, people confide in us a whole bunch of information that we don't want to share because, one, they've asked us not to. Sometimes things are under NDA. Sometimes we're not allowed to say things. And also we want to maintain and keep relationships good. So it's like, you know, anybody who's been on the show, we consider them, at least I personally want them to be somebody that I would want to talk to in real life or hang out with, and that kind of stuff. So it's been interesting to kind of straddle those lines when people are like, why that thing happened and you ain't cussed them out? I'm like, because that person is someone that I may have a relationship with, or someone that, you know, a friendship that I want to maintain. And sometimes my voice isn't needed in the space. So it's like trying to balance all those things out has been interesting as the years have gone on and how many, and even more so the more popular the show has gotten over the past couple of years. So it's a lot of balancing out. It's an interesting balancing act that continues to change. So it's fun to kind of look at it from the outside in and mm-hmm. like, okay, what does that look like?
Yeah, that's a good point about feeling like you don't have to comment on everything, because I know that Tanya has mentioned this a lot, and I totally agree with her that sometimes people tag you and like, yo, like, did you see this? Like, what's your opinion on this? And like, sometimes it's just like, yo, like, I don't gotta have an opinion on everything. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like sometimes I get tired of just, you know, feeling like I have to comment on every time somebody attacks like diversity and STEM, you know, it's kind of crazy. So, C, what are your thoughts on like balancing like the personal and the professional?
You know, so the thing is that I probably, it's almost similar to Ka, that I probably am most real to Bricago, or I'm at least more real to Bricago than I am to the people in my everyday profession. And, you know, the thing is that when it comes to sharing things with people, I don't share what I don't want to share. So that, you know, the stuff that I share with you is the stuff that I want to share with you. And it, you know, is stuff that I feel like I want to share with my friends. So, you know, because that's what we are. And I don't mind doing it. There's nothing that I've ever said on the air that I feel like was you know, afterwards I regret it. You know, and I think the most personal thing I think I shared, you know, or at least it, you know, to my memory, was talking about, you know, I'll never forget this, was we interviewed Lee Alexander on like a, you know, on a Monday afternoon, and the day before my stepfather had died. And you know, doing that was what I needed. You know, being able to kind of switch off and speak to someone that I really admired, and be with my brothers was exactly what I needed at that moment. And, you know, and then of course, I was able to share that with you guys the week after, and you know, but that's what it's what I wanted to share. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't anything that, you know, that I was forced to. So,
well, I don't think it's about being forced. I think it's just realizing that there is a pressure. Like, I mean, like, obviously you know, it depends on how you respond to that pressure, but the pressure, I think, is still there. You know?
So like if someone asked me about my opinion, you know, there are plenty of things that I have opinions about that I don't share, and I'm just not going to share them. And if you ask me, I'll tell you I'm not going to share them. Like, you know, that's okay. And if you don't like me because I didn't say something to either support or negate your personal feelings on that, then, you know, fine. I've got plenty of people in my life, believe it or not, guys. I know this is crazy, but there are plenty of people in my life that do not like me. You know, I'm able to go to sleep at night and wake up and look at myself in the mirror and say, you are a beautiful bastard and I love you.
So, I honestly think you do that.
I know you do.
Right.
I know you do.
Like, I feel like you have a mirror on the ceiling just so you can open your eyes and say that.
Hey, now.
Like, above your bed. And you're just like, I'm beautiful.
What about you, Ree?
Yeah. So, for me, it's been interesting because, as you guys know, I've been going by my full name as my online persona since about 2011 when I rebranded myself. And you know, so I knew at that time I made a choice. I said, you know, online is becoming a thing, and you know, I want to connect my brand in terms of science advocacy to my professional work, you know? So I knew at that time, anytime somebody Googled me that my online stuff would come up, you know? So at that point, at first, I was kind of like, okay, I'm only going to say professional things, right? Like my Twitter feed when I first started under like the new name was so boring because it was nothing but links to like, you know, science articles and, you know, NASA retweets and that kind of stuff, which is cool, but it wasn't me. Like, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
And about after a year of that, I made the decision, like, look, I'm going to represent me. Like, that doesn't mean I'm going to be crazy, like, wilding out, because I still think that that's something you should share in private with your friends. But I was like, look, you know, I can represent myself as science advocacy, sports, video games, politics, history, all that stuff, and still be a nuanced person that occasionally curses, that does all this. I don't need to create this like fake, perfect, clean version of myself to be a professional online, you know? And I've had people at work that have Googled me, and I'm sure they've seen all the stuff, and I've never had anybody say like, yo, like, I think you're being kind of out of pocket online because you said shit in a tweet.
Right.
You know? So I think that I kind of, you know, well, I don't want to say I predicted it, that like online things are not going to hold that much weight. Like, you don't have to be perfect online is like what I'm saying. And I think a lot of people think that you do, but you just have to be balanced. And if that means that you occasionally mad and you curse and you go on a rant, as long as you're willing to stand by that and you think about it before you send it, then that's fine. I've had plenty of stuff that I've begun to share and I've deleted it, you know, because I was like, yo, that's a little too crazy, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like there was just, you know, school shooting where 17 kids were murdered, you know, and I was about to go wild on Twitter on it. But like, I slowed down, I composed, and I made some like tweets that were still, you know, I thought aggressively for gun control, but not necessarily demonizing people on the other side, which is what I felt, you know? So I kind of like, you know, I think I've gotten into the practice of offering critique without, you know, sounding like completely one-sided. And I think that that's where a lot of my balance is just making sure that for the part that I choose to share, that I'm 100% real about it. But that I am, you know, very nuanced in my speak, and that for the 20% that I don't share on online, I'm just never going to share it online. Like, you're just not going to hear about it, you know, like that's only reserved for my personal circle. So,
yeah,
kind of how I deal with it.
It's interesting, too, because it's like, you know, you brought this up before we kind of dug into the whole conversation about people kind of wanting to not monopolize your time, but feeling they have access to you in different ways that are kind of unfounded and maybe a little bit unreasonable. But, you know, I've tried to do some of that work and buffer some of that stuff so that people don't feel like they can just ask you to do things or have these expectations for you to do this stuff. Right. And I feel like we as a show have been able to kind of push against some of that stuff as well. Like, we've been able to kind of make sure that people understand, like, yo, we are doing this work because we love doing this work. We don't have expectations, even within our own circle of us as castmates, as hosts of the show and as friends, right, to like have expectations of each other that are out of bounds for what we would expect from each other to be. Right. I think we kind of know who each other are and kind of act accordingly because of that stuff. But I feel like there are, the bigger you get, there's going to be different expectations of I hate to use the word fans, but of your listenership and of your community to kind of do other things. We've been talking about that with Discord. We've been talking about that with other platforms in ways that we want to be able to talk to all of you at home. And that part has been a little bit scary. We've been trying to figure out what the best ways to do that is, because we don't want to jump on something and not tend to it in a way where we're like, hey, everybody, come over here. And then folks aren't there to be there with you and greet you and treat you like the, you know, the person that you are. So it's a really interesting and weird balance. Like, you know, even 10 years ago, it wasn't like this. Because now people are like, yo, where's Tanya at? And I'm like, Tanya's home. Tanya's home. Like, Tanya's doing, where Reef at? Tanya, Reef is doing,
yeah.
So he's gone. He's doing stuff.
Yeah. And I remember reading a story about there was some Twitch streamer that, like, I guess I forgot who it was, but they were part of like a group. And every time they streamed on their own, the whole chat was like, where's the rest of the group? Where's the rest of the group? Right. And the person like lashed out because like they were like, yo, I'm my own person. Like I should be able to do this on my own stream. So the stuff can get to you. Like, yeah. It can definitely get to you.
Yeah. I mean, all that said, slide up in my DMs if you want some information. I'll tell you all the stuff behind the scenes. I'll tell you all the times that we cuss each other out and fight and claw at each other and then turn into cat people.
Cat people.
But word. Yeah, it's not that deep. Like I think the more that people get to know us, and it's the reason why I want us to be able to do certain things in 2018 and beyond. Like I want there to be more interaction between us and the fans. It's the reason why I'm always like, send us mail, email us, tell us things that you want to hear, or tell us things that you're thinking about. But it also means that when we do have the inevitable meetup, or we have the inevitable PAX panel, or the inevitable, you know, GDC thing that we'll do, or even E3 this year. You know, it's something where we want to make sure that you feel comfortable with us, but also know that each one of us has very separate boundaries. I'm a hugger. Somebody in the crew might not be a hugger. Right. I'm super honest and like really forthright about like most things. I'm pretty much an open book, but Reef is a little bit closer to the vest. And like, these are things that you'd learn by knowing and watching the show or listening to the show, but also you got to give people the ability to share that stuff with you in a way that you want them to, or that they feel comfortable with. So Tanya just said, if you try to hug her without asking, you'll catch hands. I remember the first time I tried to hug Tanya and she like roundhouse kicked me. She sabat kicked me in my throat.
And you deserved it.
I've never been the same. I've never been the same. This whole part of my jaw was broken. It was messed up. For the people at home, I just touched my jaw. Anyway, we're almost about to get up out of here. I really like these kinds of behind the scenes, kind of heart to heart conversations. I want to have more of these. And you probably can hear more of this stuff if you are a subscriber to our Patreon. So, Reef, if you would share some of the social media business before we get up out of here, let people know where they can hear more of this heart to heart, from the chest, from the clavicle, and from the cheekbone that Tanya broke information.
Sure. So spawnon.me is our website. You can go there for the full show archive, for pictures and bios of our pretty faces, and for other information, big beautiful pictures there as well, and the show mission and all that stuff. If you want to chat with us on the social medias, on both Twitter and Facebook, we are under Spawn On Me. So like, we're fairly active there as well. If you want to send us a email, if your stuff can't quite fit in a social media post, make sure to send that to spawnonmepodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to go above and beyond and support us with your dollars, then you can go to patreon.com/spawnonme. We have several levels of support. We have premium podcasts, Spawn On Me After Dark and the Chicago Beltway, our political show. And we have other incentives like T-shirts and things of that nature. And if you're listening to the audio show, which is released every Tuesday on iTunes and Google Play and like all that stuff, make sure that you check out our video show. We stream these shows live on Thursdays at 7:30 Pacific, 10:30 Eastern. So you can see us as we talk about this stuff and participate in the chat. So check us out.
Word. And before we get up out of here for number 208, just want to say again, thank you for joining us this week and every week. We really do appreciate everyone coming through and hanging out with us, especially on Black Panther weekend, because you could be everywhere else, but you came and hung out with us tonight. So again, we want to thank you all for that. So before we say that, what do we usually say, C?
Well, before we say that, I want to wish a very happy birthday to our boy, our brother, Tony Polanco. Happy birthday to you, Tony.
Word.
And before we say the other thing that we say, we'll say Wakanda forever. And then we say, I hate y'all. Peace. You sons of bitches.
Oh, peace.